more interaction, so I asked you guys like two questions. This one, we'll try to have even more than that, maybe some discussion. Sometimes I just get nervous and I just keep talking, but we'll see how this goes. Let's try to get a little bit practical and start putting these principles in practice and figure out how then can we make good choices and kind of thinking through these things. It's easy to say a lot of strong principles and make a lot of strong points, but then when you start thinking about what you're going to do about it, sometimes it gets a little bit more confusing. So hopefully we can talk about some of that, get some of you guys' feedback perhaps. I want to start off just by mentioning some tools that are available to you guys. Maybe you already know about some of this stuff. Do you guys know about Kids in Mind? Anybody know about Kids in Mind? Okay, we need to preach the gospel of Kids in Mind. This is a very good website, kidsinmind.com. Just Google that and it'll bring up the site. There's dashes in the URL. And what this website does is other people watch these movies and they give it more accurate and more helpful ratings than just PG, PG-13, and R. As you can see, there is a numerical score for the contents in these three categories, language, violence, and sex, rating from 1 to 10. And then when you click on the thing, they got like this big, 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 long write-out, which gives all the detail about all the stuff in there. Under sex and nudity and stuff, it'll write an adult couple kiss and things like that. Or like they're in bed, sex is implied, not shown. Or if it is shown, it'll say some other things. So you can know exactly what you're getting yourself into. If it's like a score of like 10, probably no. But if it's like a 3 or a 4, you can read, figure out, okay, what am I looking at here? If it's a Jackie Chan movie and it shows his buttocks and you're a guy, maybe you can do that. I don't know. But it also gives a lot of detail about the language that is used. For instance, most Marvel movies get a 3 or a 4. More commonly, they're getting a 4 these days. And it gives you a breakdown of all the things said. There are 15 scatological terms. Does anybody here under the age of 40 know what scatological means? Hey, there we go. Anybody over the age of 40 know what scatological means? This is not important at all. Scat has to do with feces. So scatological is basically the S word or things related to that. Just a funny way of saying that. But so you got 15 S words there, 7 anatomical terms, references to body parts and things, usually crude. You've got 8 mild obscenities, which this website is going to use, refer to the D word or saying hell and that. Then it gives you all the other random things they say, like idiot or pretty pants. Then in the end, you've got religious profanities or religious exclamations, uses of the Lord's name in vain. So before you go see any film, if you wait a day or two after it's come out, Kids in Mind will have a report. And you can know the content in that film and make a better educated choice about whether you should see that film or whether you should wait for it to come out on VidAngel. Anybody know what VidAngel is? A couple more people. All right, VidAngel, our good Mormon friends behind VidAngel. VidAngel is a content filtering site where basically it connects with streaming services, Netflix and Amazon, I think some HBO stuff too, I don't know. And basically if you've got accounts with Netflix or Amazon or whatever, you also pay for a monthly subscription to VidAngel, and then you can go through the VidAngel app or you go to the VidAngel website, and the select films that they have provided filters for, if you've got the, you know, appropriate subscription plan, you can then watch that film and you can choose what you want to filter. It'll have the same thing, sections for language, sexuality, for violence, and as you see, there's these pull-down menus. You see profanity there, 20. If you click that, it'll tell you every profane, like God or Jesus or this and this, and you can one by one select, I don't want to hear, don't want to hear, don't want to hear it. Or you can just select the whole thing, turn it off, or language and immodesty, same thing. It'll say, you know, this thing is shown or that thing. You'd be like, I don't want it. And you can turn it off and make choices there. The top, you can see 2 bars that are blue, what you'll see and what you'll hear. And that shows you what is being cut out. So there's a scene in the beginning there that you're not going to see because you chose to filter that out. It'll skip over a bad scene, maybe something sexual or something violent. What you hear is all the stuff that they're going to cut the audio out. So if they're going to say a bad word and you didn't want to hear it, then the audio will just chop out when they're saying that, and then you get on with your life. So there are some options available in which you can filter out some inappropriate content to stuff that you don't want to support. And so if you're going to watch something like Stranger Things, if you don't want to hear 50 curse words in an hour, you can filter out those 50 curse words in an hour. I think this actually is Stranger Things. Maybe. I'm not sure. All right, and then lastly, we've got Covenant Eyes. This is a little bit different. This is a content protection app. This is an app you can have downloaded on your computer, or you can download it on your devices, whether your smartphones or your iPads. And it does two things. You can pay a yearly subscription, which is not cheap. It's like $80. But that gives you the options to then, you can have content filtered. So if you search for something unsightly, it'll be like, nope, it won't show it to you. Or if, but the other thing it also does is it emails accountability reports to an accountability partner of your choice. This is something that I downloaded on my computer a long time ago, and it was just, it's great. And so whatever I'm doing or browsing, it sends a report to my brother, Dan. And so if I'm looking up something creepy town, he'll have a report, says Tim, with being a creep. And then he'll be like, bro, why are you being a creep? And so very, very useful, very, very helpful. We'll talk about some of this tomorrow when we're talking to your parents. Stuff like this, some of these things, you know, are, if you want them, if you're going to go see a movie, make sure you know what's in it, or if you would filter out, that's fine. But stuff like this is more essential if we're going to have devices that have access to unlimited supplies of horrendous ungodliness. You have to be 16 to drive a car. You should be able to have some kind of protection behind, you know, having a portal to hellfire in your pocket all the time. There's just so much bad stuff out there. Good grief. But we'll talk more about that tomorrow and how our parents need to make sure that we're being responsible for that. So be aware of that. We got Kids in Mind, VidAngel, and Covenant Eyes. And so I'll talk to your folks about some of those things. Any thoughts on that? Anybody use these? Think they're helpful? I support them.
Yeah, we have VidAngel. And, sometimes people complain, well, it cuts things out, but, you know, so what? I mean, well, I have a hard time following the story.
And we'll talk a little bit. These things aren't going to fix everything. VidAngel doesn't solve everything. One of the films they have available on VidAngel is 50 Shades of Grey. So I'm trying to figure out how that works together. Like, I want to watch 50 Shades of Grey, but I don't want to see any inappropriate content. I'm not sure why you would want to watch 50 Shades of Grey. But so filters are not going to fix everything. There's some stuff that's just like you can't filter out, really. But for some things, it works. So. Okay, so let's talk about how we can better discern what is or is not acceptable media. First, let's talk about who you should trust or what judgment you should trust. How much do you think we should trust the content ratings, PG, PG-13R, TV-PG, TV-14, TV-MA? What do you guys think about those ratings? How helpful are they to you, or how much you think we should trust that? This is an opinion question, so.
I think it's something you should probably, you know, research yourself. Like, oh, hey, it's rated PG-13.
I'm 13. All right. So, just because they slap a rating on it, does that mean it's tried and trusted? Or should we maybe do some research? That's why if you see a PG-13 movie coming out, check it out on VidAngel and figure out, okay, why are they giving it a PG-13 rating? All right, well, other thoughts on that? How helpful are TV ratings? Or how much should we trust them? Yes or no, or reasons why?
Not very helpful
because it's the world standard. All right, very good. So what the world thinks is okay for a 13-year-old. I'm 35, turned 35 yesterday. There's some 13-year-old stuff I'm not ready to handle, right? So, it's not great. It's not a great system to trust. I'll suggest it's a decent starting point. If it's R, I'm like, eh, I don't want to bother with it. It's PG-13, maybe. Let me check it out. But again, it's also not consistent. There's some R stuff I'm way more comfortable with than PG-13 stuff. You know, a movie that's rated R because it's a war film, and it's going to show some graphic content of the realities of war, I feel better about that. Not that I really want to watch that. But I feel better about that than watching a PG-13 comedy, which is full of all kinds of crude and inappropriate garbage. So if it's a PG-13 action movie or something, it could maybe be okay. PG-13 comedies or even chick flicks and stuff, there's usually a lot of sexual content in there. It's not great. Okay, that's helpful. Now, I would like to suggest, though, that this stuff is a judgment call. Did the Lord say thusly that we should not watch R-rated movies? All right. So if we're making choices, it's going to require our own personal judgment. That's what we're talking about, whose judgment we should trust. Well, the judgment that we should trust is mature, biblical judgment. And just because something is a judgment call, it doesn't mean whatever your judgment is going to be okay. You know, there are gray areas in Scripture where moral principles are supplied, but we got to figure out how does that apply specifically. Going to, you know, dances or going to certain movies or whatever, like, or drinking and alcohol and things. Well, the Bible doesn't say you can't ever consume any amount of alcohol. It says not to get drunk. So there's a gray area in which I need to make judgment. Can I have, you know, some alcohol here, or is that wrong, or whatever? There's some judgment call. But I think an important thing for us to understand is just because there's a gray area that requires our specific judgment, it doesn't mean that whatever judgment you come up with is okay. Judgment call doesn't mean God says, you know, it's up to you. God's saying, hey, here's some principles. I'm going to wait and see if you made the right choice or not. Which maybe sometimes can relate to marriage, where, you know, there's a right choice that you're supposed to know you're supposed to make, and someone is waiting to see if you care enough, if you're thoughtful enough, to understand what the right choice is, or if you just, because when we have the freedom to be selfish, and we make that selfish choice, see, I told you, you're being selfish. And so with judgment calls, God's saying, I'm going to give you the room which you can justify being selfish, because I'd rather you be mature and make the right choice. And Hebrews 5 is helpful to us. It says, concerning him, Melchizedek, which is a convoluted, complicated, doctrinal topic that the author wants to speak about. So concerning him, we've got much to say, but it's hard to explain because you have become dull of hearing. By this time, you ought to be teachers, but you need someone to, again, come and teach you the elementary principles and the oracles of God. And you have need for the milk and not the solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is an infant. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. So immature people who are bored of the Bible and have kind of stopped learning, and then mature people. And look what it says about mature people. They, because of practice, have their senses trained to discern good and evil. So by implication, mature people are those who are not dull of hearing. They're all like, Bible, yeah, let me get some of that. They're learning, right? They're growing in their knowledge. And because of practice, meaning long-term putting true Bible teaching into actual sincere practice. That's what makes them mature, and being mature equips them to do what? To discern good and evil. Cool. So what does that mean about immature people? They are not as equipped to do what? To discern good and evil. There are immature Christians who are not very good at really knowing what is right and what is wrong. Oh, don't kill, got it. But some other gray area stuff, they're not really equipped to make great choices. And I love this passage because that means we can tell people, hey, guess what? You are wrong. Your judgment is a bad judgment. It's not a good judgment call. It needs to be better than that. And if there are people who are wiser than us, have more Bible knowledge, and have proven over time that they are faithful and obedient people who sincerely love the Lord, if they think something's wrong, but I don't, what's this passage telling me? They're probably more right than I am. And when it comes to our media choices, our boring parents or these old preacher guys who are lame and have these dumb rules and say, Frozen's back. I don't see it. Don't take Frozen seriously. I don't see that. What's so wrong about it? Well, there might be something legitimately wrong about it, but we are too immature to see. We need to trust mature biblical judgment when it comes to discerning good and evil. And what needs to happen is you need to have good, mature, biblical judgment so you can make your own choices. Your judgment call is the one that's going to determine what you do. So you need to trust your mature, biblical judgment. You can't trust your feelings. We've already become way too comfortable with stuff we should not be comfortable with. Just because you don't think it's that big of a deal, that's not trustworthy. But as people who have biblical knowledge, and you, when you grow in your biblical knowledge, are going to have a better idea of how to make these choices. And that's true for me. I keep looking back on stuff that didn't bother me before, but now I'm like, that's kind of weird, too. I don't know how I should feel about that. I used to love Monty Python, The Quest of the Holy Grail, right? It's funny stuff. That's a lot of sacrilege in that movie. I used to think it was a pretty clean movie growing up. And then I'm like, I watched it with Bill and Kelvin, actually, trying to introduce them to great film. And again, I'm like, this is not a good choice. This is not a great thing happening here. You get my point, right? Okay, let's talk about some actual content. Language. All right, what are some language issues we should be concerned about in our films? If we're trying to judge what's good and bad content, what's some bad language that we need to be mindful of when we're considering what movies are, TV shows and music and things? All right, cursing, good old-fashioned profanity, saying bad words, right? Ephesians 4:29, you said it in the right order, my first point. Ephesians 4:29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but just that which is good for the edification of the moment. Another translation says, let no corrupt word come out of your mouth. There are some words that are considered by our culture to have a bad meaning. They're stigmatized being curse words. Are those words that should be coming out of our mouths? No, they're corrupt. They corrupt the hearers. They corrupt our influence. So if a movie is full of corrupt words, is that something we need to care about? It is something we need to care about. What's some other language issues we should be concerned about in entertainment?
Let's see, OMG used a lot for derivations of it.
Right, the Lord's name being used in vain. Exodus 20, don't take the Lord's name in vain. This context here, it's not saying don't say OMG. It's a little bit of a different context. But the point is that God's name is valuable. As much as you respect the name is as much as you are respecting God. It says in Matthew 6:9, pray then in this way, O Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. The name of God. The title of God, his name, Yahweh, or also translated Lord, is valuable. And the way we treat that is a representation of how we treat the God to whom that title or that name belongs. Now, how does the world view taking God's, using God's name in vain? Is it that big of a deal? It's like diet profanity, right? You can go to a movie and it has little cursing, but it has a lot of God's name being used in vain. I used to watch iCarly, for what that's worth. I found a weird pattern where they always use God's name in vain once in every episode. They'll say gosh or this thing or that or golly. I don't say golly, no one says that. But every one time in every episode, they'll say God in a vain way. Meaning the rules of whatever TV standard, you're allowed once. You can do it one time. And we look at God's name being used in vain as being not great, but doesn't really count as profanity. But you think about, what's the definition of profanity? Taking something sacred and what? Treating it profanely. So what's the real profanity? When we profane the name of the Lord, right? So is that less bad than cursing? Or is it just as bad, or is it maybe worse? That's again why we can't just trust TV ratings, because they're not going to care about that quite as much. It's an issue. You need to think about that, right? Another thing we see is just bad joking. Ephesians 5:4, no filthiness, no silly talk, no coarse jesting, things that are not fitting. Again, Ephesians 5:12, these are disgraceful things we should not even talk about. If a movie is full of crude jokes, sexual comments, speaking about sin and sinful activities in a joking and ungodly way, that's not cool. We gotta care about these things, right? So question is then, how much is too much? Kids in mind, you look at Guardians of the Galaxy. You've got one F word. You got five S words, nine anatomical terms, 15 uses of the D word or hell, seven religious exclamations. Yeah, at what point do we say it's too much or it's okay? Again, there's a judgment call there, but like, kids in mind ready, you get much past three. And you say you have a healthy salad of ungodly speech coming out. And we need to think about that. Thoughts or questions or comments on bad language in films and some ways we should make some better choices about that? I'll also suggest this is one of the issues that has a big impact on us. Bad language is an easy sin to fall into. James talked about how uncontrollable the tongue is. I remember when I used to work at Starbucks. I would be frustrated there because, stuff and things and people. And a lot of bad language there. And I found myself in a situation where I'd be tempted to let unwholesome words come out. That was a time when I was listening to a lot of ungodly content filling me up and under the right pressure coming out in a bad way. So I think we need to care about that a lot. Cool. All right. Let's talk about sex and our entertainment. I think some of that is under the category of provocativeness. There is sex that is sexually stimulating, whether that's nudity or sex scenes or immodesty. I think about Leviticus 7 when it 17 when it talks about all the people that you're not supposed to have, intimate relationships with. It says you don't look upon their nakedness. How much nakedness are we supposed to be seeing as people? Not a lot of nakedness, like we're supposed to have one wife, or one husband. But when we're allowing ourselves to see the nakedness of other people, I think it's something we should be very defensive of. I don't like the idea of some image coming in front of me and seeing something that I would rather not be a part of me. Nakedness is an important thing. Go back to Genesis, and that was a part of the closeness of man and woman. But because of sin, then it became an issue. And so if we look at nakedness as something flippant, doesn't really matter, and we fill ourselves with these images, we're really cheapening something that is greatly valuable. I'll leave it at that, but that's something we need to be really strict on and not want to be a part of. But then there's sex scenes. Now think about this. How normal is it to see some kind of sex scene in film? Right? Very, very normal. What if, you were like walking by someone's window and things were going on and you're like, okay, I'll just gonna sit here and watch for a little bit. What would that say about you as a person? Yeah, that's right. You are gross. Get out of here. Not having any of that. What if the people were like, hey, some things are going to go on here. You're welcome to watch. What'd you think about that? Creeps, right? Call the neighborhood watch. Get out of here. But our TVs are windows and it's some pretty creepy stuff that was. That's desensitization. We're just used to it. Like, it's not cool. It's just not. We need to have a big problem with that. Be very strict on that. And seeing these sexual things, it feeds into us, makes us become more sexually out of control ourselves. not a good situation. We need to be very, very strict, not allow that. Even, and sex scenes also doesn't have to be explicitly shown for it to still be provocative. There's ways in film in which they can be very provocative about some sex scene, and you're not seeing any nudity or whatever. So just because it's all the no nudity, it's fine, but obviously still not a good situation. Think about song lyrics. You know, a lot of artists, depending on the genre you're listening to, put a lot of creativity in describing things that, you know, are just belong in marriage, and that's it. And feeding ourselves with this kind of theme and content. And again, it's becoming very prevalent and common modern pop. Again, Ariana Grande, like, that song I mentioned before, very explicit. What's this one? The Bronx girl, the brrr girl. What's her name?
Cardi B.
Yeah, when I was just trying to look up some examples, same thing. Like, there's just a lot of very explicit stuff in song. That's not the kind of stuff that we want to be a part of. Think about immodesty, though. I think we need to be very strict about when immodesty is in film. Think about the movie Jumanji that came out a couple years ago. And one of the jokes is there's, like, the stereotypical, like, attractive, like, adventurer girl who's wearing, like, the very impractical, immodest clothing in a jungle. And so that's its own joke. But you watch the movie, and what are you watching the whole time? Well, there's just this immodest girl the whole time. It's not great, you know, or you're watching, you know, Marvel movie, you know, Thor's gonna have his shirt off at least once, because they gotta get their money's worth there. And he's not ugly, so I've heard. But that stuff, it feeds into us. It impacts us in a big way. This is the kind of stuff that we need to be very protective of and to cut out. I'm not doing a very good job at interaction, as usual, but I'm telling you, we pay the price when we are slack on our consumption of sexual immorality. It's much easier for me to speak about, you know, the guys. I am a guy. I've worked with a lot of guys, been to a lot of guy camps and stuff. Let me tell you, it is an issue. It's a problem. You know, good godly men growing up in good godly homes, we're having a big issue with this, and period, right? And a huge part of it is because how much it's being shoved down our throats, how much you can't hide from it, but also how much we're not hiding from it. We're not putting protection on our devices. We're not being selective about what we're choosing to put in front of us, and we're just consuming stuff that's corrupting us from within in a very real way. And then we complain about, like, oh, it's just hard. I want to be a good person, but I keep consuming trash all day long, and imagine that, I'm still a bad person. It just doesn't make sense. But I also say more and more, it's becoming the same way for women, for females. The differences between gender and our culture are getting blurred. And as our society begins to blur this more and more, and we're infected and impacted by that more and more, then some of the stereotypical guy and girl problems are not going to become so stereotypical. They're going, you know, guys are going to be more sexualized in their behavior. Women are going to struggle more with having sexual thoughts because just this awful mess that our media is producing regarding sexuality. So we need to be strict. We need to cut it out. And don't complain about these issues and struggling with that if you're not being smart and honest about your choices there. But also with immorality, or with sexuality, it's not just about if something is provocative and stimulating. It's also just about the immorality itself. I used to watch Seinfeld. It's a funny show. Quit watching it. Some bad language. But anybody hear Seinfeld anymore? Okay. It's a sitcom, and basically it's about New Yorkers, three really stupid New Yorker people who find themselves in stupid situations. But a lot of it is just about fornication. You know, they're going to have a new boyfriend or girlfriend every episode or so in their relationship. And just incidentally, as a part of the relationship, they're just sleeping together. They're not going to show a lot of stuff, but it's just a part of the show. Fornicating with this person, fornicating with that person. And even if it's not overly sexual, What's it saying about fornication? That's just what you do. It's just what it is. And so it supports an immoral behavior, even if it's not always showing it in a provocative way. You know, and same thing with homosexuality. That's an issue. It might not be explicit in the show that we're watching. It might be incidental that there is a homosexual relationship. And the more incidental it is, the more you can be like, well, it's just there. But the more that relationship becomes the center of the production, the harder it is for you to watch it without supporting what's being presented. And the more that this immorality becomes the focus of the entertainment, the harder it is to watch it and say you're not fellowshipping with what that show is supporting. That makes sense? And that's gonna get trickier. With fornication, we really need to think about that because, again, it's just so normal. It's in any and every show. Is it incidental fornication that's just kind of off scene? Or is it, you know, here's just this romantic couple and they're just doing it and that's fine. Right? Or the same thing with homosexuality. Like, in our entertainment, are we choosing to endorse and promote and support behavior that we just know is not right? It doesn't have to be explicit or provocative. If it's there and we're digging it, then I think that's a problem. That makes sense? Yeah, it's tricky. All right, cool. All right, what about violence? Violence is a big gray area. Part of what makes violence tricky is because violence is a reality of life. A very violent book is the Bible, right? A lot of violence in the Bible, presented as a reality of human nature. So how do we handle that? Well, first of all, God, He hates violence. The earth was filled with violence, and that's what He hated so much. God hates violence. God hates humans being cruel to each other. So how do we draw the line when it comes to violence? What do you think? When is violence in film going to be something that should be more offensive to us than not? Bad question. I think I'm prepared with good questions. Think about it. Like, compare, like, Captain America to some other more violent, or to Taken or something. What are some differences in the violence there? And what are some things we should consider?
In some of the movies, it's not really purpose of the movie. It's like they're trying to, it's like with the Bible, it happens in the movie, like Captain America, it happens, but he's trying to stop it. And so you have movies where the character, the main character, they're trying to stop it, or like,
okay, so if you're watching a war movie, most war movies these days are kind of about being very open about the horrors of war, and it can be very violent, but is the message like, violence is good? It's usually like, wow, like look how horrendous human violence can be. Is that a message that we can get behind? Well, I think so. But if the violence is then glorified, like, wow, look how cool it is when this person's really good, killing people, that's promoting a different message entirely. Think about how gore comes into the picture. Maybe a movie like Saw, or if anybody has either played or seen on YouTube some Mortal Kombat stuff and some of the fatalities and stuff, what seems to be the idea behind some of that kind of gore? What's going on there? Why do we like that? We like to see the blood and all the stuff oozing from people's bodies. So we should put that in quotes. But isn't that true? Like, I don't, like, why? We watch some weird stuff on YouTube. We watch, like, you know, like, surgeries and things, or weird, there's some creepy stuff that, like, attracts us on YouTube, which I can't explain. There's something about, like, death and gore that attracts a part of the human psyche. Is that something we should feed into? I mean, death is represented as the enemy in 1 Corinthians 15. Death is the unnatural consequence of sin. goes against God's plan for our eternity. The human destruction, the destruction of the human body is not something that should inherently itself be entertaining to us, I don't think. Again, people die in the Bible. The Bible describes how people die. But if it's like a Mortal Kombat fatality and someone's been really clever to come up with a really cute way to mutilate the human body for entertainment purpose, it's a weird thing going on, you know. The more we stray into that kind of gore, we need to wonder, what am I being entertained by? Why is this entertaining to me? Is this natural? Is this God's plan? Or is there something else going on here? So that's some things to think about. You know, the more the violence is separated from gore and from human harm, maybe the more harmless it is. Speaking of violence, I watch hockey. It's a sport kind of known for fighting. It's apparently a lot less fighting in hockey these days than before. I don't like fighting. I'm not going to lie. It's a little exciting in hockey. And my wife has pointed out my inconsistencies there. I don't like UFC. And she's like, well, you watch hockey. Like, I do watch hockey. I like to justify, well, hockey, nobody's really getting hurt. They have all these pads and things anyways. But the whole point of fighting in hockey is you're excited because, you know, that guy did this awful penalty and someone's going to go around and bash him in the head and we're like, ew. But what's the point of that kind of violence? It feeds that selfish desire for people to get what they deserve and things. I don't know. We need to be very, very careful about that kind of stuff. What about shooting games? Well, first-person shooters. Video games are obviously very, very violent. What are some things we need to consider in our violence in video games? Anybody here play video games? We got one half of video game player? We got a few there. All right. All right, what do we need to think about when it comes to video game violence? You raise your hand, so you gotta say something. Manager. Anybody ever play Grand Theft Auto? What's the whole point of that game? You run around and you do all these things that you're not really normally supposed to do. You run over ladies in a car because you can, right? And it's entertaining because it's fake and whatever. But like, you start doing that for a little bit, and you're like, this is really weird because I'm making some really weird choices with my fake little person here. Again, in video game violence, if it's all about us doing things we shouldn't be doing. I mean, if we're blowing up bugs and some aliens and stuff, it's kind of removed from human violence. Or if it's like more the competitive nature, like it's not violence, just, oh, you got me, whatever, okay. But when we're actively engaging in explicit and detailed ungodly behavior, like that's worse than watching it in a movie because you're the one making the choices to do these things. So, all right, so that's some content, some things to consider. Just some other random things. Think about social media. This, a lot more should be said about this. I only have Facebook, which even that's a nightmare. But think about some special challenges that social media presents. Again, social media, we are the ones who are making the media and we're consuming the media from our friends. What are some special things we need to keep in mind when it comes to social media? Some do's and some don'ts. Based on some of these principles we've talked about today, what are some things we need to be keeping in mind with our social media?
I feel like especially for girls, it leads us to compare ourselves to like the perfect person.
Okay, man, talk about impact. Social media's impact, because now these are people that we know who are living this dream and we're not them. I mean, it heavily impacts what we value about ourselves, what our goals and dreams are. We're too busy, we're not busy pursuing the things of the Lord because we've got all these other things that we got to get straight first to be worthwhile people, not helpful. We can be creeps?
No, you can block creeps.
We can block creeps. That is okay, yeah. You know, we talk, yes, you can block creeps. Do that on Facebook, there's a lot. Yep, and the whole 24/7 of it. Think about this. Are we public school? How many of us are public school? Some of us. Are we homeschool? Who's homeschool? Oh, God. Okay, cool. Well, think about peer pressure with your siblings. public school, you go to public school, and you're around a lot of not great people. And while you're there, wow, peer pressure. But then, now you have your smartphones, you go home, and all that peer pressure is still just as big a part of your life as it was before. So that constant influence. If you are homeschooled, hopefully you have friends besides your siblings that you can, that can peer pressure you properly. What about supporting? When it comes to social media, is there a danger of us supporting some things we shouldn't support? What are some challenges we have with that? Got a question, miss? Yeah.
And so I'm like, if I like the picture because I love the person, but if I like the picture, does that mean to other people I'm supporting everything in this picture? And like, that's an issue.
Yeah, what are we supporting when we're liking and sharing and commenting? If they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, we're like, yeah, it's cool. Not good. But also too, kind of what you mentioned before, and the narcissistic stuff, if it's unhelpful for us to need this constant validation from people around us. If I'm a girl and I'm going around liking all of the like these really glamour pictures of other girls, good for them, they look good, that's great. But if I'm feeding into that whole culture of you have to look good in order to be valuable, I don't want to support that. Or if, you know, people are posting all like their, like, living the best life, hashtag blessed, and vacation, and I'm just supporting, like, you gotta have all this great life to be a happy person, like, I don't know. A lot of dangers when it comes to social media. A lot of dangers, there's a lot of creeps, right? With our phones, bad media is increasingly more invasive. Certain apps, you've got random people or friends who can send you whatever they want. And you just should not have that as an option. You know, Snapchat is cool because you can send pictures and videos that automatically delete so they don't take up space on your phone. But it's also a way in which you can have zero accountability for what you're sharing, and people deliberately use it to share things with people that they don't want to be saved, and get involved in immoral behavior there. We need to be very mindful of them. Cool. Very good. Very good. All right. Some other things to consider. When it comes to messages, realize there's a difference between the message and the content. Sometimes a movie can have bad content like substance abuse, right? That's not a good thing. But if the message is that substance abuse is bad and it ruins people's lives, is that a message you can support? Okay, so that's how you can watch some movies that have bad things, but you agree with the message, so that's okay. But if in a movie about how drugs are bad, it's also got a lot of profanity and sexual content, okay, you agree with the message, but you still don't want to, like, involve yourself with all that other bad stuff that comes along with it. Or think about if the content is mixed. Sometimes we find ourselves in situations where we're conflicted because there's a show that we like, because of the humor, and the things that are funny are clean, and they're fine, and they're good. Like The Office. A lot of things we laugh about in The Office, perfectly clean. It's good, funny stuff. But then there's also the other stuff in there that we don't even like it. We wish it wasn't there, But he says that crude joke again, or this thing and that, and like, eh. So we kind of put up with the some negative stuff because we like the stuff that isn't bad. Is that okay, though? What do you guys think about that? It's a little trickier, right? To sometimes be a little leaven the whole lump of dough. Sometimes some of the bad content ruin our ability to enjoy. Even like the beach and water parks, I like water and stuff. But there's a lot of places I'm not going to go because the way people are dressed, I'm not going to be a part of that. And so that kind of ruins, it takes away my ability to enjoy a lot of things I would like to. But you know what? Like, it is what it is. Maybe we can filter out some stuff like we talked about and enjoy it. But I'm not sure we should be tolerating a lot of negative bad things just because the other stuff is okay. My issue is memes. Memes are addicting. They're like the M&Ms of comedy. You can choke down a lot of memes. I have Facebook, and there's a couple of meme sites on Facebook that I continue to like denounce and then go back and follow. Because some meme sites are almost clean. And you go and you watch like, you go through like 50 memes because they're funny. But out of those 50, there's going to be like 10 or 15 or something. They're like just not a good joke. Bad words or bad content. And I wish they weren't there, but you know what? They're there. And so how do I feel if I laugh at a bunch of clean memes and I also look at a bunch of negative memes? Like, we also like to argue ignorance. Well, I didn't know that that negative thing was going to be there. Or I didn't know this movie was going to be bad. There's some room for ignorance. You look at a new YouTube channel. You don't know who that person is. Oh, they curse and this. Okay. So first time you might not know. But how often are we really ignorant? You know, this show is not always bad, but sometimes it is. And so if you're watching an episode that happens to be bad, you're not really that surprised. Because you're not, even though you didn't see that one episode, you're still not ignorant. I don't know, there's a lot of stuff we do. It's not the wisest. All right, let's go ahead and try to wrap this thing up. Ultimately, what do we need to do? We need to be willing to cut off whatever ungodly media there is, regardless of its value. Matthew 5:29, if your right eye makes you stumble, what should you do? Tear it out, throw it from you. Why? It's better to be in heaven with only one eye than be in hell with two eyes, right? This is a statement that is made four times in the book of Matthew. Twice in a row here in Matthew 5, it's just thinking about your hand. And then again in Matthew, in a different context, it's like, oh, let me remind you of that really good thing I said a little while ago about something, no matter how valuable it is, because you just sin, what do? You get rid of it. Based on the Joseph principle, when something is repeated, it's for emphasis. And so if Jesus says it four times in one book, and the other gospels repeated as well, this is a very important principle, and you know why? Because how willing are we to throw away things that we love, even though they cause us to sin? Not very willing. So you've got to repeat it. Think about this. How valuable to you are your eyes? What if I offer you $1,000 for your right eye? Would you do it? What if I offered you $5,000 for your right eye? What about $1,000,000 for your right eye? Sean says yes. What about $1,000,000 for both of your eyes? Not so much, right? We've got like billions of dollars worth of gear in our bodies already. This stuff is really valuable, right? He says it doesn't matter how valuable this thing is. If it's sinful, or if it causes you to sin, what? It's not worth going to hell for. It's just not. Music means a lot to me. I can remember the day that I became a music fan. It was in fifth grade. I remember very well. It was a Smashing Pumpkins song, 1979. I said, that's it. Like, this is music. It's my thing. Very valuable to me. There have been some bands and some artists and some things that I really value that I've had to say what? It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. There's been shows and movies. I used to like Wes Anderson films. But you know what? It's not worth it. And that's what we need to be willing to do. Think about the example of Acts 19, the example of the Ephesian Christians. There were some former pagans, some former sorcerers, who made a living doing their sorcery and their false prophecy, and then they became Christians. So how compatible was their former life with Christianity? not compatible. And what do they have left over? They have all these books training them how to be fake wizards, right? And then left over, and they gotta figure out what to do with them. Now, if you're smart, you would sell that and make some cash. These guys weren't smart, they were righteous, and what they do? Many of those who have believed kept coming, confessing and disclosing their practices, and many of those who practiced magic brought their books together and began burning them in the sight of everyone. And they counted up the price of them and found it 50,000 pieces of silver. So the word of the Lord was growing mightily and prevailing. We wonder, you know, how much is 50,000 pieces of silver? They burned all these books. How much was it worth? It must have been a lot if the author tells us how much it was worth. It depends on what the piece of silver refers to. It might be a drachma. And according to some random guy on the internet, when I did a Google search in 5 seconds, it'd be worth $5.5 million. You're thinking, that's a lot of books. Right? But keep in mind, if you had a book, how'd you get that book? Because someone did what? They wrote it, right? Word for word, they wrote that book on paper, papyrus that took a long time to make, or vellum to be animal skins that they pressed into paper somehow. So think about how much money it would cost to make and own a book. We're coming like a couple of $100 per book. And you're this sorcerer dude, and you're trying to figure out how to make a living. You're like, well, I don't really have any talents or abilities, so I'll just become a fraud. And you invest in this education and learn how to do all this, you know, fraudulent behavior, and you spend a couple of $100 on these books full of mumbo jumbo, and you're paying the rent, being the sorcerer, but then you become a Christian and you realize, wow, you know, my life of paganism and of deceit, it's no good. So you confess to the Christians that you're fake. Think about what they had to give up. First, they gave up the money they invested in the books. Hundreds of dollars on these books they bought, right? Is that the only thing that they gave up? They also gave up their line of work. How are they going to make money? They got to find a new job. So they're losing their income. They lose all the investment they put into their education to get that job. Also, they're losing their reputation. You confess to a Christian, oh, I'm a pagan, I've been a fake, I come to Jesus Christ. The Christians are going to think what? Yeah. All your homeboys you've been tricking your whole life, what are they thinking? Like, wait, what? I've been giving you like $50 every month to read my palm, and you've been a fake this whole time. So now you're ostracized from your entire community. How much did these guys give up? A lot, right? We think about Paul. Think about what Paul gave up. You know, he was on the road to success until he went and took the road to Damascus, and that changed. We only read about one relative of Paul, Paul's nephew. Paul's nephew heard about a plot from the Jews who were going to kill him as he's being transported from one prison to the next. And he made the plan known, and he was saved from that. That means that Paul had a brother or a sister close by that probably didn't care. Only his nephew, young person, cared enough. What happened to Paul's family? He lost his family. He had no more real family. That's why Titus is his son. Timothy is his son. What did Paul give up? He gave up everything, right? For what? For knowing Christ. Everything Paul had was lost. It was cutting into my spiritual bank account. It was rubbish. It was garbage in comparison to knowing Christ, in comparison to suffering with Christ and attaining to the resurrection of the dead. What is so valuable to us, it's not worth giving up for Jesus Christ. You know, there's no music that is so relatable. There's no film or show that is so entertaining. There is no app or device that is so essential, you have to have it. Cut out the show. If you have to get rid of your smartphone or your laptop, get rid of that stuff too. Not all of us had that growing up. It took me like 5 minutes to check my email when I was in middle school. It was a hard life. We've lived without these things before. If it's between Jesus and this thing, which thing are you going to choose? When I did this lesson a decade ago, I was going to change this because it's not really, it's a little outdated. But I used to do these classes before, and I had these conversations with these individuals after these classes. One young man says, Tim, I just wanted you to know that I snapped my CDs and deleted close to 300 songs off of my iPod. That's how dated this is. Probably like $100 worth. So there was a young man who said, man, you know, it's not worth it. He got rid of it. $100, you know, early 2000s when you're like 12. It's a lot of money. Another young man says, you know I should get rid of this stuff, but I just feel like Eminem is my best friend. Does anybody here still like Eminem? Oh, we got one? Okay. We move on pretty quick from this stuff. Nothing is so valuable. It's worth holding on to. Do not sacrifice your relationship with God because you're not willing to separate yourself from ungodly and unholy entertainment and media. All right, 3 hours of me talking is a lot, even for me, even for my wife. But I'm really grateful you guys are here. I hope it was helpful. I hope I didn't mumble too much. This is just a big part of our lives. Don't take any shortcuts with this. You are the one who's going to have to make these choices for yourself. Realize God's holding you very accountable for the choices that you're making. And there's a lot of brothers and sisters around you who need a lot of help making a lot better choices. And I wonder if there's too few of us who are really making a strong stand, leaving the rest of us to just be kind of complacent to do whatever we want and not take it that seriously. And so maybe if there's going to be some reform in this area, it's going to come down to you. And not only what you choose to be influenced by, but how you're going to choose to influence your Christian family around you. So I would charge you with that responsibility and expectation. Thank you guys very, 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 very much. May God bless us all and that we would be better servants of His.